to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome, folks. Welcome, everybody, to the Gym Podcast. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello, everybody. I had a pretty good, relaxing bye week of football since Alabama wasn't playing. We're getting ready for the big game next week. You had a pretty high energy introduction as a sick person, so it's good to see you kind of still on your toes.
Yeah, let's break the ice here. I have a cold. I do have a bit of a sore throat, so I'm going to try to keep the energy high, but no guarantees. I think what got me sick, Randy, was watching Oklahoma's offense last weekend.
I'm just going to say that joke was not planned at all.
Where to begin? Should we start there? We have a lot to talk about this week, Randy. A lot happened.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into last week's game, some of the notable ones. I think the most obvious one is the Tennessee-Oklahoma game. I have to say, I really, really hate to say this. I really hate to say this.
Oh, no.
Tennessee looks legit this year.
They look kind of good, don't they?
And we play them, of course.
Well, I'll say this. They looked really good in that first half, but it seemed like in the second half, their offense really couldn't get much going. I kind of wonder if, you know, Tennessee's the kind of team that can stall out for multiple quarters in a row. So they're good, but are they great? I think that's the question.
I wonder how much of it was game plan. I mean, it didn't look like they were trying. I don't know if that's the right way to articulate the point I'm trying to make here.
Right.
But it's almost like, okay, our defense is humming along. Let's not do anything super risky. They knew Oklahoma's offense could do nothing against them.
Right.
And they had them at a constant, like, 2-score, 3-score kind of arms reach distance. Mm-hmm. If Tennessee, I felt like if they needed to pull out the playbook, they were ready to.
That's true.
Look at the first and second quarter. They just hit them hard. And then as soon as they kind of felt comfortable, they played a little bit more conservatively. And that's the vibe I get from it. Like, if they wanted to keep scoring, they absolutely could have, if they truly wanted to put it up there. But they played the best method to win the game. What really scares me about Tennessee is the fact that I don't know how much of this is just Oklahoma's offense being that bad, but it seems like, so the mark of a great football team is you know how to win a game in a lot of different kinds of ways.
Right.
That's always been the mark of a great team. So Tennessee being able to win both shootouts, being able to win in these low-scoring defensive slugfests is scary. It's very scary as a rival.
I mean, to be fair now, it does look like Jackson Arnold is a little bit washed. We saw Michael Hawkins Jr. come in the fourth quarter, and he put up 12 points in one quarter. It seems like Jackson Arnold is benched for the rest of the year. Is that correct, Randy?
I mean, we don't know how the rest of the year is going to shape up, but yeah, they are starting, what's his name,
Michael Hawkins Jr. I believe he's a freshman.
Michael Hawkins. Yep. Interesting. They are going to start him. He's like the mobile dual threat freshman, true freshman quarterback. He's going to start next week versus Auburn, and Auburn is terrible, so that's going to be a good tune-up game for them.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this, though. Remember how we said these teams with these senior quarterbacks that can't do anything, what they need to do is get a true freshman athletic quarterback that doesn't even know enough about life to know that they should be nervous.
It's been the theme of the season. I will say, though, Jackson Arnold, you may not realize this, Randy, he's only a sophomore. To which I say, Jackson Arnold, welcome to Madison, Wisconsin. It's great for you to be a Badger in the 2025 season. We need a quarterback, so I'm looking forward to this guy playing up here in the Big Ten.
But especially given their offensive line struggles, I mean, I'm sure he could be playing better.
Yeah.
But a part of it is like it's a team game. His offensive line is doing him no favors, but he's not adjusting well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is kind of a not, even if it's not necessarily his fault, this is what's best for the team. And you got to do what's best for the team as the coach, right?
I totally agree. And he didn't really have a great season last year. He played a little bit in 2023. There were okay stats, but this year it's just like it's they're fine, but like you're not going to be able to seriously compete in the SEC with their schedule with Jackson Arnold. So I think it was the right call to, like you said, go with the hot hand freshman quarterback. Just let it rip.
The time old tale is defense wins championships, right? And is that still true?
Oh, dude, the last three championships have all been defense. So yes, it's definitely true.
It's definitely not, okay, well, it's not as much of a crutch you can lean on anymore, it seems like. It seems like you have to have a competent offense, because I've seen instances where if a team had, as long as they had an elite defense, no matter how bad their offense was, it would keep them in the game. But that doesn't seem to be true any longer.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, like, for as much as people, like, rag on, like, Georgia's offense when they won the titles in Michigan last year, both of those teams were incredibly physical with the run game. Like, they could compete with just about anyone in the front line. Oklahoma last weekend, man, their line looked just depleted. I don't know. It was, like, weird to see how bad they were.
Exactly. Their offense plays complementary. You need your offense to play at least complementary football to your defense.
Right, for sure. So prayers for Oklahoma. I'll leave it at that. Prayers to Koss. Though I do think the Sooners will fail in the SEC. I wish them all the best. I really do.
I don't necessarily. They've shown in the past decade that they can have both an elite offense and they can have an elite defense. They just need to manage to have both.
It's easy. Just be elite everywhere. Easy. Speaking of other teams that changed conferences and had their first game in conference this week, I think we got to talk about another big game this weekend. USC at Michigan, also losing their first Big Ten game. What do you make of USC and Michigan at this point? Both have one loss now on the season.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, it almost seems like they're both just kind of 8-4, 9-3 teams just waiting to lose a few games.
It's kind of
Like,
I do.
Yeah. When are they going to sputter out? Because they both look like good, above-average teams that are not world beaters. I'll give Michigan, and I'll even give Sharon more credit for the fact that, like, he's – a lot of times coaches nowadays try to have, like, an ideal world team where even though this quarterback may not be the best quarterback, like a Jackson Arnold or whatever, they're still going to try to force that system and playbook and not just do what they can with what they have. Mm-hmm. Because it's like they always want to have this team built that it's built the way a team has to be built to win a championship, even if it's not very good.
Right.
Michigan, with the way Michigan's built now, it's like, let's face it, when you have a running back as your quarterback, what they do with Alex Orji.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to compete for a championship with that style. No. But you said, you know what? Screw it. That's what we need to do to win games today.
Had like less than a, like 50 passing yards or something insane, didn't they? And they won. Just obscene.
Yep.
Let me go to the box score here. Wow, 32 like, yards of passing.
Coaches of teams that clearly need to in order to win a few extra games refuse to do it off principle, which is like kind of lean into a gimmick a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do, man.
Yeah, I kind of wish Wisconsin would do that, because we don't have a quarterback, so why not just run the ball every play? If it works, it works, you know. It doesn't have to look good.
I mean, you guys have a good line and good running backs. I mean,
just do it.
Why not?
Just do it. A couple other games real quick, Randy, I wanted to talk about last weekend. Did you catch the James Madison, North Carolina game?
Dude, yes, I did. I actually watched a little bit of it. James Madison won 70-50.
Crazy.
Did you get a chance to watch it?
I watched the whole thing. It was probably the most entertaining game I saw last weekend. I think at one point I messaged you, I remember I posted a screenshot of the score and I said, this feels historic. And I stand by that. It felt historic, dude. That first half, James Madison put up 53 points on the road against North Carolina, who I know is not a great team, but like, holy crap, dude. I don't know. James Madison, to me, is a front runner instantly for the G5 school, in my mind, to make the 12-team playoff. They looked fierce out there. Just bananas.
And if you remember last year, was it last year where they went undefeated but couldn't make the bowl game because they were still on some type of like probation?
Yeah.
Going in the FBS.
They eventually made a bowl game, but yeah, it looked like they weren't going to be able to for a while there. But yeah, they went, 11-1 last year in the regular season. So
that's, I mean, a win like that is what. The thing about being the G5 representative, what they're going to look for is they're going to look for a big win over a power team. They would rather, like, you can get away with an otherwise very weak schedule as long as you have one big win over a power team, and that's what that would be.
Right.
Because it was a dominating win, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the score isn't really reflective of just how much they dominated. Most of North Carolina's points came in garbage time, like well after James Madison had kind of checked out, you know.
It looks like they did play even a couple decent teams on their schedule. A couple decent G5 teams, sure. Like Marshall, App State.
Well, Old App Dominion. State's cooked this year.
Coastal Carolina, Georgia State, Georgia Southern. Those are not bad teams not for bad. The Group of Five. So we'll see how that shapes up. Because we're going to see a very interesting Group of Five playoff spot race. I mean, you have to remember, no, they don't get the bye, actually.
No.
They're not going to get the bye, but they could play.
Technically, they could. Which is weird to think about, but
technically
like,
they could.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But no, that's actually a more interesting point, because like, what if we have like a 12-0 James Madison, and then the Big 12 champion is 9-3 or whatever? Yeah, what happens?
I know. I agree.
That would mean that the Group of Five would probably get the bye.
Yeah, I mean, if James Madison keeps playing as good as they did last week, they're going to dominate every single opponent and be undefeated, and you know, be in a position to make that argument. I think. Come December. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I honestly, like, it was nice to see a G5 team win with confidence. You don't see it very often. And I think to me, that is the sign of a truly great G5 team. They are confident when they kick your butt. Don't see that very often.
Yeah, that is a very good sign. I mean, they had a great year last year. They've been a great program. So we'll see how this shapes up. Again, I wanted to make a point about how I've seen comments where people talk about how the regular season doesn't mean as much anymore. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that. I don't believe that to be true.
Not
I think the regular season is better now.
For these schools, certainly. I mean, like, literally, like, regardless, a G5 school is going to make the playoffs. And so every single, like, top-tier G5 program, it's do or die every single week. Like, you need to make your statement for why you're the best G5.
Exactly. It's just the focus of which games are the important games have shifted.
Right.
And if anything, there's more games that are not considered the premier, mm-hmm. like, very important games.
I agree.
Really matter. And part of it, I kind of understand where people are coming from, because they're going to say, I mean, think about it. In what world is Alabama or Georgia ever going to lose to James Madison in the playoff?
Sure. But like,
but
James Madison,
that also that creates a. Let's say an upset happens. And you know they're going. James Madison's going to lose the very next week. That's a common argument. I get it.
Yeah.
But on the same token, think about it. That creates an even harder barrier for Alabama and Georgia, because it's like, yeah, we could realistically get upset.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take every opponent seriously in the playoff, and it serves as a stumbling block, almost like the season within the season. You have to really make sure you're on your toes and taking care of business and kind of test all aspects of a team's culture and everything.
And to me, I think like the first G5 school that ends up winning a playoff game, which is going to happen eventually, right? That's going to be such a massive boost for that program. Like such an incredible, like, you know, way to get new recruits, fans on board, you know, people buying into your program. I think it's going to happen eventually, and it'll be really cool to see when it does.
Yep, that's very true. And people are going to buy their hoodies, their merchandise now.
Yeah, dude.
And there is one game I know for sure we definitely need to talk about.
Please.
The Colorado-Baylor game. Did you get to watch the ending of that?
I went to bed. I was so disgusted. I was asleep. And I woke up. Literally, I remember actually waking up the next morning. Was the first thing I looked at on my phone. Like, I was like scared to look. And I saw the post-game thread on Reddit. And I was sad. Yep.
Well, Colorado won because they had a Hail Mary at the last minute to send it to overtime. And then Travis Hunter at the 1 yard line in overtime was able to force a fumble into the end zone. So
I just
very interesting game. It was kind of funny. Like,
you're back on Colorado.
So you hear these are okay. They stormed the field after beating Baylor.
Yes, they did.
I get that they were 1-11 before Deion got there, but come on.
There's no excuse for storming the field there. There was another team that stormed the field this weekend that like shocked me. We need to talk about one more game. We can come back to Colorado. But what really shocked me as far as storming the field goes this weekend, Florida State, quote unquote, upset California at home. And I remember watching it live, and on the final play, it was like a goal line stand on fourth down kind of a thing. When Florida stopped them, the entire team stormed the field, and they called like an unsportsmanlike conduct on the team. Because like
they were happy, man.
Know it's just like, good God, you just barely beat Cal 14-9. Just, which I guess, yeah.
You know what? I actually think, okay, I get it's silly and we're going to clown on them a little bit, but I think that's actually a good thing in the sense that the locker room still trying and bought in. They haven't just completely given up. And I was thinking about this earlier. You know, we talk about the playoff. Florida State's not technically eliminated.
No, Randy, don't do this.
I'm just saying, like, I wonder how much of that is in the back of their mind. Like, hey, we got some players, you know, what if we just went out? You know, one week at a time, right?
Man, I mean, it'd be one thing if they dominated this game. It'd be one thing if those three losses were all flukes. But, like, man, they looked bad against Cal. It's just that Cal looked worse. And looking ahead, dude, at Florida State's schedule, they still have to face Clemson, Miami, Notre Dame, Florida State. Murder Mertz is back, dude. Murder Mertz was back on the menu last weekend. Like, good luck getting past Murder Mertz. That's all I'm going
to
say.
He beat a Mississippi State team that lost by, like, three touchdowns to Toledo. So let's chill out a little bit on that.
I'm just saying, I was surprised by his stats. I was looking at that game. Graham Mertz against Mississippi State. SEC powerhouse, Mississippi State, by the way. Graham Mertz went 19 for 21. 201 yards, three touchdowns. The man had more touchdowns than incompletions. If that's not Murder Mertz ball, I don't know what is. I don't know what is. What more do you want out of the man? I don't know.
He told me he has one game like that a year at least. Yeah. All right, so I have a question for you.
I'm ready.
How long until Auburn hires PJ Fleck? How long does that?
You know, the stars are aligning the more I think about it. Because for one thing, obviously, Hugh Freeze is gone this year, right? We both agree on that.
Maybe. Like, we're seeing a lot of controversy now surrounding him, more controversy than was already there before he got hired, you know, with the whole making high school girls change in front of him thing.
No big deal. Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal, you know. Where former players that played for him are coming out and just saying not nice things about him, how he doesn't care about them. They never get invited to anything. He does, you know, he doesn't care about them. Mm-hmm. Now, we're also hearing from former Auburn players as well saying, hey, we have to buy our own tickets to games. We're not invited to anything. Right. They don't care about us. And we're seeing this common theme with Hugh Freeze where people, his former players and people that are supposed to associate with him are really just calling him out in a very public way about his personality or like his character. And it's not even character related to those kind of allegations.
Right.
From before he was hired. It's completely different. So I find that to be very interesting. And it definitely speeds up the firing process.
For sure. And I mean, the thing is, Auburn this year, dude, they just lost a pretty bad loss at home. Against Arkansas. I mean, it's Arkansas, folks.
They look hapless.
They still have terrible. Yet to play Oklahoma, Georgia, Missouri, Alabama. Like, they're probably, honestly, looking at their schedule, they might not make a bowl game this year. I think that's grounds for termination. And I just wanted to say, look at Minnesota. Have you noticed how they're doing this year?
I have no idea.
They're 2-2. They just lost pretty embarrassing to Iowa. They have yet to play at Michigan, USC, ranked Illinois, Penn State, Wisconsin. Minnesota's another team that might not make a bowl game. And I could easily see not so much PJ Fleck getting fired, but Minnesota being kind of like, the door is right there, you can go if you want, sort of a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The timing.
Kind of quitting before he gets fired, too,
right,
kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Keep his stock up. And the timing works out so well because Auburn, we've talked about this for years, Randy, you and I. Auburn is exactly the kind of program that would believe the con man that is PJ Fleck. Like, Minnesota and Auburn, they're intertwined. They're just, you know what I mean? They're like twins, kind of.
I feel like that's one thing that's really bonded us, is having like our main rival have that same vibe.
Yeah, they fall for it every time, you know? Every time. It's just, it works. I'm serious. I think I've been saying PJ Fleck to Auburn for years. I think the timing is right this year. And I'm excited for him to be gone. Randy, how are you feeling about PJ Fleck on the Auburn sidelines?
Oh, I'll be so excited for that. There's so many ways to make fun of the situation. Just poke fun. It's going to be great.
Do you think he carries over the row the boat thing? Like, what happens to that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. He's going to carry over all that stuff. But he's going to, like, incorporate it into the whole Auburn vibe. Auburn, They have like this whole family thing. They're gonna buy it because they're very into the Auburn family.
You're right.
And it's just different here.
It's just
you just wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it, Randy. They got a tree.
They're gonna buy into the whole PJ family shtick and all like the words he says and the little phrases. So Cole Kublik is a former Auburn player who's one of the Jocks 94.5 radio hosts. And even he said, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, he said something to the effect of, man, that PJ Fleck up in Minnesota, I've had some conversations with him. I really like some of the stuff he says. He really knows what it's about. So, like, I'm seeing this happen. Like, this is in the process of happening.
And they're going to go on and on about how, like, oh, did you see his 2019 season, dude? 2019, man, they beat Penn State. And just it'll be all this crap of like imagine
gonna hype them up so much.
Imagine PJ with the talent here at Auburn. It's gonna be disastrous. I can't wait, dude. I can't wait for this hypothetical thing.
I will say about Hugh Freeze. I'm trying not to be just like blatantly mean.
I am,
but it sounds like he seems like the kind of person that can like be outwardly very friendly and smile at you, but then when it comes to like people he's worked with or interacted with in some type of way, he never like actually connects with them. You know how it is when you make friends with somebody and you kind of work with them on a project for a little bit, and then you realize like you just learn naturally about their life and stuff. You're like, oh, they have a newborn, he has a family, this and that. Sure. And you think 3 or 4 years later, hey, I wonder how he's doing. I'm gonna get into contact with him and just ask him. He's not the type of person to ever do something
No. Yeah. I feel like...
He does not care about these people. Like, he just doesn't care.
He seems very, like, in his own world, kind of. That's how I would describe from what I've
seen. In a very bad way, because, like, if you interact with all these people and have all these business, quote-unquote, relationships, you should kind of be curious. What I mean? You should connect with the people you work with and around.
I feel like coaching is, like, all about connections. You know, like with your players, with other coaches, with the staff, etc. Right? Like you look at Saban
and truly understanding these relationships and the natures of these relationships, and especially like even when it comes to like on the field play, understanding how these relationships go together on the football field and how it contributes to like a team's performance. Right?
Man, I hate Hugh Freeze, dude. I hate. He's a con man. Too many con men in this sport. I'll leave it at that.
Yep. I mean, I can understand somebody being kind of a jerk. That's one thing. But I would rather have a jerk as a coach than a con man. Like, James Franklin, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
But he's not just a blatant scam or a fake con man. I can deal with that.
Yeah, he keeps it real. I respect that.
All right. So, moving on. Are you ready for this was their Super Bowl?
Oh, yes. I've got it, Randy. Are you ready?
Wait, I already know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
It's Florida State, dude. How could it not be? Like I was saying, they stormed the field like against Cal. Like the joy.
I remember this being, was like a morning game, was it not? And I remember it being like 2:30 in the afternoon and we were talking and we said, man, this only like halfway through the day. We've already got this was their Super Bowl award on lock.
It's too easy.
But the Colorado game.
Yes.
I think it might have topped it.
It was your Super Bowl. You're a big Colorado guy. Ugh.
3-1. They're 3-1, right? No, so I watched it live. And so it was actually really funny because they stormed the field too early, a play early. While they were still in the interview, the game is still going on. You hear it over the loudspeaker. They're storming the field. Yeah. They stole the goalpost and tore it down before the game was actually over.
Oh, my God.
They're making this big hoopla, and ESPN is doing, like, you know how whenever there's a big field storm after a huge game, and they just kind of sit there, and they don't commentate over it, and they just show it happening?
Yeah.
They were doing that for it with those, like, really dramatic camera angles.
It's Baylor, dude! It's Baylor!
The students' faces going, whoa!
Like, guys,
so that's why I give it to them. They act like they just won the Super Bowl.
Do people forget Baylor went 3-9 last year? Like, it's just insane to me, dude. Like, oh my God. I'm so glad that Colorado's schedule does pick up here later on in the year, because, like, man, this is not in no universe should you be storming the field after beating an opponent of this caliber. It's unacceptable.
I genuinely am curious how they are going to shape up this year. They've had some pretty close calls, obviously.
Yeah, every win's like a nail biter. Yeah, the Big 12 sucks, but like, so does Colorado, man. Like, I just don't know, man. Like, we saw what happened when they played Nebraska, who's apparently not even that great of a team. So, like, I think the moment they play a team with a pulse, with some talent, they're going to be exposed. And they still have to play Kansas State, still got to play Utah, Oklahoma State, Arizona. Like, these are games they're just not going to win. So.
From what I can tell, Utah doesn't seem to be the best team in the Big 12, the team to
Yeah.
beat. If I had to make a prediction, I think Utah's going to be the Big 12 representative at this point.
Sad to say. I'm a huge Utah hater. I want to go on the record for that.
Really?
I'm a huge hater. I don't know.
Okay.
There's something about the team that what irks me about Utah is they have this like kind of they try to put on this identity of like we're tough. We do it the right way here. There's no shortcuts, man. Every man is contributing to the team. Not everyone does that. In fact, most teams don't do this. It's like that's complete crap. Most good teams do this. You're not unique in that you have a team. Oh my God. It irks me. It irks me,
No,
dude.
I get what you're
It
saying.
irks me.
I understand.
Like just because a lot of Big 12 teams rather don't do that. A lot of Big 12 teams don't play that way. Sure, but like you don't have to look far, dude, to find really good teams that are collective units. It's not that tough.
It's
Oh.
like how Auburn pretends like they're the only school that has like a sense of togetherness on a
Yeah,
campus.
yeah. It's like that, dude. It's like that with Utah. I don't know. They just rub me the wrong way. Plus, isn't Cam Rising still playing? Like, what's going on, man?
He's injured. He hurt his hand or something.
Again? Scam Rising, as I call him? Let
Again?
me look him up. How old is he? He's 25. He's
Dude,
25. Just.
go to a temp agency at this point. Go get a real job, dude. Just sell your insurance,
Right now,
man.
if you are at home, go on Google Images. Look up a picture of Cam Rising. He looks old. He looks too old to be playing with children. You know what I'm saying? Like he
But
is.
that's okay. That is one part of college football and just college sports in general that really needs to be cleaned up is the fact that you now have grown men playing the sport. And it's like they either need to like lean fully into this idea and give people like 6 to 8 years of eligibility for grad
Yeah,
school,
call in.
or just or completely put a pin on it
Like
and
5 year
just,
max kind of a thing. Like no red shirts,
they
just
need
get
to go
5
one
years.
direction or the other because
Yeah.
you get these special circumstances where players can play this long for whatever reason. And I don't know.
I get it, but like it seems like there's so many loopholes now. 'Cause like Cam Rising got a transfer like free year for that. Cam Rising got the COVID free year for that. Cam Rising got a red shirt free year for that. Cam Rising got a injury free year for that. It's just like exception after exception after exception after exception, and this is what happens, man. You get a 25-year-old playing in
And at
college
a certain point,
football.
we have to take a step back and realize this is college sports for
College
college
sports,
age
folks.
people. Like, it's not fair to the talented 18-year-olds who are just sitting on the bench, even though that can be playing,
I can't believe I'm saying
because
this,
some
though.
25-year-old doesn't want to go get a job at his local insurance agency.
I gotta give Cam Rising this one thing for going for him. He is one of, I'm assuming, only a few players left in college football who was alive in the 1990s. He was born in 1999. Let that sink in.
He probably is.
Let that sink in. So, yeah, we're staying strong, I guess, us 1900s kids. Other topics, Randy. Other topics for us this week. What do we got?
Do we want to give a Heisman, September Heisman update on who we think it's going to be?
Honestly, I think we should because I'm going to, for the first time this season, mix it up.
All right, go
I
ahead.
still like Cam Ward. I still think he's gonna be a front runner, but I think after last week's performance, I gotta hand it, Randy. You're not gonna like this, but I gotta hand it to Nico Iamaliva. I know that's not how you pronounce
I am
it,
a leader.
but when he transfers, by the way, Iamaliva is it's the jokes write themselves. But seriously, he had a great performance against Oklahoma's pretty tough defense. And just throughout the year, dude, his stats, he's been lighting up teams, lighting them up. On the season so far, he's got 7 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. He's been averaging, what, like almost 300 yards a game, super high rating. I think this guy's the real deal. He's certainly got the potential to win the Heisman if Tennessee keeps winning. Now, granted, Tennessee has to play Bama, Tennessee has to play Georgia, so they might lose, but. On the other hand, those are Heisman moment potential opportunities. So I'm giving it to Nico in this week.
That That is the thing. It's like the Heisman is often about you have to have a big Heisman moment at the right time.
Right.
And he does play Alabama at home, and he does play at Georgia. Those are two huge opportunities. Huge games. Yeah. But here's the thing. Outside of those two games, Tennessee's schedule is kind of soft.
But he can stat pad. He can stat pad, Randy. He can stat pad against Florida and Arkansas and Kentucky and Mississippi State and Vanderbilt and pump up his numbers Jaden Daniels style. Okay, and like Jaden Daniels, he only has to play okay. They don't even have to win necessarily. Like, as long as he looks okay against Alabama, that's all you need, right?
No, I disagree. You have to win the game. Jaden Daniels, he's different because he had the wild plays.
I guess.
The individual plays.
I guess.
It's just different.
We'll see. I think he certainly has the opportunity. He certainly has the opportunity.
I'm going to say, I think it's going to be Travis Hunter. I think at this point, everybody just accepts how good he is. If Colorado has a half decent year, he will win the Heisman if they go 6-6, because they're going to chalk it all up.
They're going 6-6. So, I mean, like, I don't know. It just seems wrong, dude. I don't know. There's something wrong about a team being that bad and having a Heisman winner. Like, I can swallow a team like last year. Swallow's a funny word. I can stomach a team like LSU having a Heisman winner last year. Because at least they were good. Like, they were ranked, right? Like, LSU wasn't bad. Colorado is bad this year. Like, they're objectively bad. And we
but
never
think about
see...
what the definition of the award is. The most impactful player.
But is it
country,
really an
right?
impact if they're still bad? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I mean, he's the reason they're 6-6 instead of 1-11.
I guess I'd kind of disagree, to be honest. I think Shador is probably playing a bigger impact on that than Travis, and Shador ain't winning the Heisman, so.
I don't know about that. It's like they're both super important to it, almost like a 1A and 1B type of thing. Because, like, Shador is their offense, and he is their defense.
I think Travis is going to put up big numbers, but I just think the overall resume is just not going to be there. God willing. I'll give you this, Randy. I could see him getting an invite. Because they love those press tours with, you know, big superstars like that. So I could see him getting that. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think what it's really also going to boil down to is I'm still believing in Cam Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as he can just... Here's the thing. He just looks cool throwing the football.
He does.
If Miami can have a primetime game later in the season where he looks cool and they win...
Mm-hmm.
Then there you go. But are they going to have that opportunity? Because, I mean, who else
their
they play?
Schedule is so soft. It's weird, isn't it? Like, they have such a soft schedule, it's kind of hard to make a case for him. But, like, for what it's worth, man.
His moment was week one, and everybody's forgotten about that.
Yeah, Miami, like, is literally BTFOing every single team they play. They beat South Florida this last weekend 50-15. Prior to that, they beat Ball State 62-0. Florida A&M 55-9, right? And, like, I get it. These are bad teams. These are really bad teams. But, like, any player that's putting up that many points, he's got 14 touchdowns in the season in week four. Like, this is insane. Yeah. His stats are insane. I don't know, man. I want him to win. I'll say that. I think he is the coolest player, and for that, he deserves some recognition.
The ACC championship game, I think, is going to be very interesting.
Do they vote though by then?
That's going to help them.
Isn't there like a thing where most voters vote before the conference championship games?
That is kind of true.
Which is lame,
the voting
by the way.
System is very lame and kind of outdated.
Because, yeah, like, obviously, whoever wins the ACC championship game is going to the playoffs. Like, that's your opportunity, right? Presumably against, like, Clemson or something. Like, I could see him styling
because
on Clemson.
That's the thing. If you can build up enough, that's another part of the equation. If you can build up enough early steam, then whatever you do later in the season doesn't even matter at that point. As long as you have some moments early in the season.
Yeah.
I remember that happened with the Lamar Jackson year where he just lost out like four games in a row. But by that time, he'd already locked it up. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
He already had his great moments, and he was still putting up stats.
Yeah. All that matters. What's next, Randy? What do we got next?
All right, so I guess we can move on to next week's game.
I'm excited. Well, kind of. I'm terrified as a fan.
You play USC, that's right. Is that right, USC?
It's true. I want us to have a game plan. Let's talk real quick about that game. I want us to approach this game the exact way Michigan did, which is agreeing that we don't have a quarterback and being like, okay, that's fine. We're just going to run the ball. I want us to run the ball every single play. If we're passing, we're losing. So just run the ball. USC can't stop us. USC is soft. They're on the West Coast. They don't play defense. Run the ball. That's my advice to Luke Fickell this weekend.
Run the ball. I agree. Yes, that's pretty much what you need to do. Lean into what you got. I actually wanted to talk about the Friday night game. So you remember we were just talking about this with Cam Ward and how you have to have that Heisman moment.
Yeah.
Miami plays Virginia Tech on Friday night.
Come on. It's Virginia Tech, dude. They just lost.
But it's a spotlight is on Ben game. If he has a good performance, I'm just saying that's a feather in the cap for his Heisman.
It is true though. It being a Friday night game, like everyone's gonna be watching it, even though it's not a good game. You know, kind of like objectively speaking, there will be a lot of eyes on him, and so I think this is the kind of game like we were talking about before, where he needs to just keep pumping up those numbers, right? Get a couple of really big highlights for the highlight reel. Because this should be a pretty easy victory for Miami this weekend.
Yeah, he's got to make it look effortless, and he's got to look cool. He's got to have one really cool throw.
Just one.
Where, if you remember in the Florida game where he had that really amazing throw into the back of the end zone on the run, mm-hmm. have one throw like that, and he's got the Heisman on
lock. You know what I like about him? Oh, man, this is the Cam Ward show, dude. I just love how he makes these crazy throws, and it's like he's unfazed. Like, it's the true definition of cool. It's like doing something amazing and just, like, acting like you've been there before, saying it's no big deal, it's effortless, you know? It's, oh, my God. I want more of that dude. I want to see him, like, run 50 yards and, like, dive into the end zone and then stand up and just, like, walk back to the sidelines, you know? Like, that's how Campbell
yeah, does. He just looks cool, man. That's what I'm cool. saying. Just he looks cool. cool.
God. Good for him.
All right. So we also have – so now we're on the Saturday.
Sure.
For the noon games, we have Minnesota at Michigan. You know these teams better than anybody.
I do.
Is this the type of game where Minnesota can pull something epically funny?
Opposite. This is going to be a cathartic blowout for Michigan, who doesn't have much of a team this year. But, like, Michigan, the thing about Michigan is they are a very talented team. People forget this, right? But, like, yeah, they got blown up by Texas. And, yeah, it was kind of close against USC. But, like, this is the kind of game where Michigan's huge offensive line can just bully Minnesota. I mean, they can just run all over them. And so I expect Michigan to have a lot of very big plays, explosive plays, kind of boring plays, just running up the gut. But, like, their guys are faster than Minnesota's. They're stronger. They're leaner. You know, they're able to just zip right past them. And so I'm hoping and praying that the Wolverines run up the score against the Gophers this weekend.
All right. We also have Maryland at Indiana at noon. Indiana is 4-0 and they've looked unseasonably good. Do you think the dream continues for Indiana? And do you think they have any outside shot at, you know?
Here's the thing. If Posty's watching this, you got to understand, like, yes, Indiana has the most points of anyone in FBS football right now, which is crazy. But they've played no one. And I get that Maryland's not much of a threat, but, like, I think Maryland's going to have more of a pulse than Charlotte or UCLA or Western Illinois or FIU. And I think it's going to be the kind of thing where now that Indiana's playing, like, just an okay team, they're not going to know what to do. You know what I mean? It's like they're just going to be, like, totally shell-shocked from, like, having opponents that tackle you. And I could see them losing the game because of that.
I mean, they played UCLA, who has, you know, talent on paper, I guess. I mean, it's at least a power conference team.
I guess. UCLA's bad this year, dude. Look at UCLA's schedule if you want to laugh. They're probably not making a bowl game this season.
Yeah,
I don't know why I brought them into the Big Ten. They're kind of an embarrassment, for being honest. But shouts out to Indiana.
So, at 2:30, we have undefeated number 15 Louisville at number 16 3-1 Notre Dame. Does Notre Dame, you know, continue to correct the ship? Because this is the big game in regards to the ACC. Notre Dame doesn't play for the ACC championship, but I do think this does count as a conference game,
right,
for Louisville.
So, I think, for what it's worth, like, everyone's clowning on Notre Dame, but, like, honestly, if Notre Dame wins out, I think they probably still sneak into the playoffs. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, possibly.
So They're still motivated. And, like, this is a ranked matchup. You know, like, you win this game against the 15th best team in the country on paper, like, you're going to be... Notre Dame's 16 right now in the AP poll. Like, they don't need to work that hard to get to the top 12, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, making the top 12 is not that insane with one loss. So I think Notre Dame has a lot to play for. And for their sake, I hope they come out guns blazing and really look good against Louisville.
Next up, we have Oklahoma at Auburn. How funny is this game going to be?
You tell me, Randy. You're the SEC guy here.
It's going to be hilarious because you're going to see inept Auburn just make mistake after mistake where they look visibly frustrated versus a very inexperienced Oklahoma quarterback where it's just a turnover fest. It's sloppy. Neither team can get out of their own way. But Oklahoma's still going to win by like a few scores. It's going to be hilarious to watch. I'm just saying.
So you don't think Hugh Freezes is going to pull off the victory here?
There is no way.
Okay. What game do you think Hugh Freezes is getting fired this year? Not to change Chubbs too much, but like, what is there a game where you think
Auburn typically doesn't fire coaches midway through the season? I think they're going to wait until after the season's over.
Okay. I guess Alabama's the last one.
I think they're actively talking to PJ's agent like right now. Throughout
as we speak.
They're actively talking to him. Speak. Yeah. Like, they might actually be at this point.
I'm literally like, dude, if this happens, I feel like the Jim Bobcast is like, we're the first ones to call this, aren't we? I don't see anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see anyone spreading rumors, but I swear, I just have a hunch. It's destiny, dude. Speaking of SEC teams, Randy, I think it's time we discuss the actual game of the year. I want your conclusive thoughts, your unbiased thoughts on Alabama versus the Dogs of Georgia. How are you feeling this weekend?
I feel confident. But obviously, with it being Georgia and with it being Kalen DeBoer's first SEC game,
that's true.
You know, I'm going to be cautious and very nervous about the game. I think the fact that it's going to be a home game is going to greatly benefit us, and I'm very glad that it's a home game. Our crowd has been really getting into games, and we've really been ramping it up the past few years because we've needed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to be able to impact the game as a crowd. I feel pretty confident. You know, I don't think, what's his face? Carson Beck. I think our defensive line is good enough to get to him.
Oh, for sure.
And create enough chaos. I think the real battle in the game is going to be our offensive line versus their defensive line. If you've seen what happens if Milroe is protected.
Oh, yeah. He cooks. It's too easy for him if he's got time. So Georgia needs to put pressure
on
him.
If we're able to keep pressure out of Milroe's face and we're able to draw up some designed quarterback runs at the perfect times to keep them off guard, you know, force them to have to spy and keep that pressure off of them, I think that bodes very well for us.
The thing is, I keep thinking back to the previous weekend's game, Georgia at Kentucky, and just how bad Georgia looked in that game.
I know,
rat poison, I get it, but like, honestly, dude, like, we know that Georgia has a pretty low floor. Can we agree on that? Like, they have the potential to just lay an egg and play very poorly.
Laying an egg for Georgia looks different versus us than it would versus Kentucky. Because, again, they were playing pretty vanilla. When they needed to have a drive and had to open up the playbook, they did, and they closed out the game. Mm-hmm. They were looking ahead, and I'm not putting any stock into that game. It's just what happens.
I having seen Alabama in person now for the first time, and specifically seeing Jalen Milroe, I'm telling you, his deep ball throws are among the best I have ever seen in person. I would equate it literally only to seeing Aaron Rodgers live in person in his prime. It is at that level of, I literally could not believe what I was seeing, how accurate he was, just effortlessly throwing these balls quite literally 45 yards downfield and just within inches of where he was intended to throw the ball. Effortless. Every single time. Zero exceptions. Milroe is that good on the deep ball. And this is where I think Georgia, it's like, even if you have great defenders, dude, even if you have a great secondary, there's only so much you can do against the perfectly placed ball. You know what I mean? And like, for what it's worth, man.
What they can do against that is get pressure on Milroe. And they're going to have to get very creative with their blitz packages.
He can run,
though,
dude. If they,
he is, Let me give you the criticism of Melrose. When it comes, he's bad at reading. He really is kind of bad at reading pressure, and he stays in the pocket too long. Mm. If they can get some creative kind of hidden blitzes where he doesn't quite see it coming, they will get a hand on him faster than he can kind of see it coming and be able to bring him down a little bit, slow him down enough to get game tackle. That happens a lot to him. If they can force that, kind of have that happen, that will bode well for them. So it's going to be about his processing speed.
He can just run. He's so athletic, dude. Like, he's so hard to bring down.
But the problem is,
down.
You're not going to out-athlete Georgia. That's the reality. He can out-athlete South Florida. He can out-athlete Western Kentucky when he makes those mistakes. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to do that to Georgia. They're going to have some creative blitzes, and that's going to be the way the defense needs to play, is don't even give him the opportunity to be able to set his feet and throw it deep, to find the deep man. You're going to have to kind of be risky with it, because if that blitz gets picked up and he has a lot of time, it's almost a guaranteed touchdown.
I'll say this, though. One final thing that we need to mention with this game. Alabama has allowed 2 touchdowns this entire season. I saw one of them in person. No big deal. It was right in front of me. Georgia doesn't have that great of an offense. Carson Beck's not a really electric quarterback. I mean, I think if this ends up being like kind of a grinding it out kind of game, I could easily see Georgia just not being able to get into the end zone. You know, I could see Alabama just totally shutting them down when they need to. And I just think Alabama can win this game in so many different ways. Like we were saying before, man, a great team can win games in different ways. Alabama can win in a shootout. They can win in a slugfest. They can win by grinding it out. It doesn't matter, dude. They can win in every single dimension to this game. There's no world where Georgia wins this game. I'm sorry.
I will say I think that bodes well for us, because I don't think Georgia is the same type of team where they can, quote-unquote, win in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Granted, they're very good at what they do. Obviously, they're extremely good at what they do, if not the best. But if we can force them out of that comfort zone and say, hey, you got to go put up some points, and you have to keep your defense off the field.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if they would necessarily be able to do that, because that's ultimately how we beat Georgia every time, mm-hmm. is that we kind of stay a step ahead of them in the play calling.
Yeah.
And they can't keep their defense off the field. No. They have these long sustained drives. But the thing is, we now have this very feast or famine offense that is not good at sustaining drives, but they will score 80-yard touchdowns.
They will.
So it's like, I don't want our defense to get tired out just for Miller to be able to throw a couple bomb touchdowns. You know what I mean?
I get that.
It's going to be very interesting. I feel like both teams are going to very much be fighting for ball control, mm-hmm. while also trying to make these super explosive plays at the same time. And it's a very delicate balance to try to meet.
I it's interesting. You know, we've discussed a lot this season, this whole idea of like coaches and quarterbacks kind of, you know, almost like hiding their hand. You know, like kind of like saving the big plays for when they need to. And
before
kind of...
you finish that point, I wanted to make one amendment previous point.
Please.
Said, I think Alabama's going to have to find that delicate balance. I think Georgia's 100% going to play keep away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's their only way of possibly winning this, is like long sustained drives and like, you know, killing the clock, wearing you down.
Don't try to give Noah as few opportunities as possible to throw that deep ball.
Anyways, I guess the point I was trying to make is that like, it's obvious that Milroe, his one weakness in my mind is kind of that short, short passing game, right? Those like, you know, passes to the outside for like 5-6 yards. For whatever reason, he's not that accurate on like a quick release ball. The thing is, I think Kalen DeBoer is not going to goof around in this game. Like, they are going to go to the throat, play one. Like, they're going to be airing it out on the first drive. They're going to air it out on every single drive because it works. It's like, Georgia's not going to be able to stop that dude. Randy, I'm going to be honest.
It works, but you have to get it going, and you have to be able to trust their defense against Georgia's physicality,
dude,
and offense.
Alabama,
you have to hold them off while you make it happen.
I'm serious, and I know this is copium. I know this is copium, Randy, but I'm going to say it. This is my lock of the week. First lock of the week of the year, I might add. Alabama is going to beat Georgia by more points than they beat Wisconsin. Quote me on it.
I don't know if that's true.
They're going to, dude, it is going to be pedaled to the metal.
Georgia's defensive line is a lot better. They're going to get enough pressure to where he's not able to just throw it at will.
Doesn't matter. He can scramble. He'll run for a first down. He'll run for more yards than
he
would.
He doesn't see the pressure happening. It has to be a designed run. He doesn't see the pressure coming.
Randy,
that's the criticism.
You're
going to
be so mad.
They can get some creative blitzes in there.
You're going to be so mad when Bama's up 56-0. You're going to be furious, dude. Oh my God.
I will say one thing I love about our offense. Okay, one thing I love about Kalen DeBoer is he is the most aggressive play caller I've ever seen.
He is.
He is aggressive, and he does not let off the gas, but he does it in a very controlled, purposeful manner, and he's not reckless with it. And if you go back and watch Washington games last year, mm-hmm. it's exactly that. Controlled, super aggressive play calling.
Yep. He knows when to go for the kill.
Just going right out the gate. Yep. Yeah, he just always felt looking for that kill shot.
It's good.
And it's so fun to watch as a fan. I'm sure.
I know. Everyone likes deep balls. You know what I mean? So... Rest in peace, Georgia. It was a good run. But
all right, I didn't want to talk about – so Illinois versus Penn State, both teams are undefeated. And true. Penn State has looked very shaky.
They have. But on the same token, I don't believe Illinois is good. It's a weird conundrum, dude. I think both these teams are fraudulent. And I could see this kind of going either way. You know what I mean? I want Penn State to win because I'm really tired of Bert Bielema. And I just want someone to put Illinois in their place. They played no one this year. You know what I mean? Like, they've looked kind of shaky against every opponent. Please tell me.
Maybe Nebraska. I mean.
But, like, barely. And it's still Nebraska, dude. It's still Nebraska. You know, it's Nebraska.
I just wanted your thoughts as a Big Ten fan. Okay.
I'm rooting for Penn State.
I mean, Penn State. Okay. Does Penn State, have they been sandbagging early in the year? Like, are they fine?
I think the thing with Penn State, dude, is just, like, they're kind of, like, they're like a kid that's, like, really tall. Like, just, like, 6'8" or something, right? But they just, like, are unathletic. And, like, their parents force them to join the high school basketball team. But they don't really like sports. And they can't really dribble. And they're only on the team because they're athletic. Like, that's Penn State. That's my analogy.
They kind of remind me of, like, I'm sorry to our Penn State listeners. They almost remind me of, like, the great value brand of, like, Michigan or Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've always been playing second fiddle. Even the years where they beat Michigan or beat Ohio State. Like, they're still kind of the little brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's unfortunate tough. For them.
I still hope they win, though. I hope they beat Illinois' butt.
As for the night games, now that we're kind of getting to those. Well, Georgia, Alabama, Illinois, Pennsylvania are both night games. Mm-hmm. But we have Florida State, 1-3, at SMU, 3-1. Is Florida State, are they going to keep it going?
Is SMU good this year? I'm not sure what to make of this. Because if SMU is good, they'll win.
SMU has a lot of talent on paper.
Okay. That's surprising. But they are a Power 4 team now, I guess, technically speaking. ACC powerhouse, SMU. Here's the thing, dude. This is at SMU, which I think actually will play in the favor of the Mustangs because, like, man, again, there was an atmosphere, there was a vibe at Woke Campbell Stadium this last weekend where it was just like, it felt like a big game, even though it shouldn't have been. I think that same feeling is going to transfer over to SMU's home crowd. Like, they're going to want to go in for the kill shot. Like, dude, everyone in the ACC this year knows they could beat Florida State. And they want to so badly. Like, you got to keep that in mind, you know?
That is very true.
So I think SMU pulls it off. I really do.
I think it's going to be interesting if they can kind of pull their team together. I don't know what it is with DJU. I mean, he's not very good.
That's DJ kind Poo.
Of what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Because even in the Cal game, he did not look super
no.
good. I mean, he threw for 177 yards. That's not a lot. One touchdown, one interception, a win. I mean, that's just not going to do it.
It's 14 points is not going to win you most games, you know, ultimately.
Yeah.
Tough. Any other games, Randy? Any other games?
So, we have, I wanted to cover one more, and it's going to be Washington State, undefeated 4-0, just beat Washington, mm-hmm. at 2-1, Boise State, number 25.
Isn't Boise State joining the Pac-12 now? What's going on with that?
They are joining the new Pac-12. And the reason this game to me is interesting is we have undefeated Washington State. Mm-hmm. And I believe the current modern-day Pac-12, which is only two teams, there's two teams in the Pac-12 this year. Mm-hmm. I believe they still technically get an auto bid if the highest-rated team in the Pac-2 is, if they're one of the, what is it, top five rated
Top five highest-rated conference champions. Yep. Wild.
So I'm just saying there's a lot of implications in this game.
I mean, for what it's worth, this is probably the last decent opponent Washington State plays all year. I mean, Boise State is ranked, for what it's worth, even though I think they shouldn't be. So, yeah, I mean, Washington State would need to win this game. What's interesting, I think, is that they're according to ESPN, not favored to win this game. Vegas thinks they lose by 7.5 points. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. I as a hater, I'd like to see Washington State lose. So, give me the Broncos.
You know what? I did find it very interesting how Washington State and Oregon State fans complained and complained and complained about how dare big business do this to us and cut us out. Yeah, it's such a detriment to the sport. Yep. It's so horrible and evil. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, they literally just did the exact same thing to the bottom of the Mountain West.
Disgusting. It really, really have no shame over at Oregon State. No shame at Washington State. They cannot take a step back and look in the mirror, and it's pitiful, honestly.
They made the business decision. I don't derive the business decision. I derive the double standard.
I don't want to hear the crocodile tears. You know what I mean? Out of these so-called fans, like it's obvious that they want to inflict just as much pain as they supposedly have faced themselves. So, no sympathy
for their best benefit, of course. Yep,
no sympathy for Washington State. None. Let's go Boise State. Kick them in the butt. Kick them in the butt.
Go Boise State. Boise State is a very interesting team because I wonder if the fact that they played Oregon so close is actually going to help them. I don't know.
It might. I mean, for what it's worth, when it comes to the group play, it's interesting. I remember everyone was clowning on Oregon after that game, but now I think the consensus now has kind of shifted to, well, maybe Oregon actually is kind of good, and maybe Boise State just happens to also be good. You know, like it's still kind of early in the season. We'll have to see how it shakes out. But like if Boise State ends up only having that one loss be against Oregon by 3 points, they might be in the playoff conversation. You know,
it's going to be a very highly ranked. It's interesting to see. I think conference champions.
The G5 conversation this year has never been more interesting. Never been more interesting.
And there's also just so many teams right now that are still kind of technically in the bubble that are kind of good. Mm hmm. I do like that about the regular season now is that there are still a lot of good, great, even teams, a big pool of them. The regular season still matters because these teams are going to play each other.
Right.
And the results of these games are going to determine who makes the playoffs in every conference.
It's true. I mean, it's...
Because there's like a bunch of 3-1, 3-0, 2-0, 2-1. You know, those kinds of teams, there's a big pool of those.
That it's normally, have to sort stuff out. Right, and teams that normally, after their first loss, would just be like, it's over. Why even bother? Right, they're still motivated, I think, to keep grinding it out.
Exactly, they're still motivated, and that's why I think the regular season is even more important now, because it's like, oh, you have a bunch of 3-1 teams. They're not giving up. They don't see the season as just a wash at this point.
Exactly. Randy, any other games or topics you wanted to cover this week?
That is all that I have for this week, unless you have anything.
No, I think we can wrap it up there. Randy, thank you, as always, my friend, for joining me this week with my cold. Thank you for keeping the energy alive. And I really do mean this sincerely. I hope you have a good time this Saturday against Georgia when you put them dogs down. It should be fun.
I hope that happens.
Should be fun. Should be a fun weekend. Folks, thank you for listening, as always, to the Gym Podcast. We really appreciate your support and love. And as always, Roll Tide!